Hey, it's the Andy Social Podcast, episode 204, and this is a last-minute episode. This one just crept in, just like nudged in right at the last moment, bumped somebody back. Anybody that listened to the Crazy Talk episode from earlier this week would have known who just got bumped, so apologies to that person. They will be out next week, and I won't spoil it for anybody that wants to be surprised when they will come out. However, I managed to catch up with Joel Hoekstra from Whitesnake, and a really, 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 really quick backstory. I tried to get Joel on the podcast about a year ago, actually almost a year ago to the day, when Jess and I were in New York, and I reached out to Joel and tried to tee it up, and just didn't work. The schedules didn't quite line up and just didn't happen. However, when Joel and the guys were coming out to Australia with Scorpions, it didn't initially register that I would reach out to him to do a podcast because I just assumed that they wouldn't have any time. Most touring bands have very minimal downtime and opportunity to do things such as a podcast, of all things. There's many other priorities that need to happen. But there's been a lot that's been going on the past few days. So Scorpions had to cancel their Sydney show or postpone it. That's been rescheduled at the time of recording this, tomorrow night, Wednesday, the 26th, I think it is. So that was rescheduled. Brisbane got cancelled. Auckland got cancelled. And it's just been this absolute mess that's happened over the past several days. And the reason for that is Klaus, the lead singer from Scorpions, had a kidney stone and was stuck in Melbourne having surgery on that and obviously has to recover. So even for tomorrow, I'm going to the show. I can't wait. I'm a massive, massive Scorpions fan. You can hear me waffle on about that in the Crazy Talk episode. But I'm also a massive Whitesnake fan as well. I got to see Whitesnake in 08 when they last came out. And it's going to be really, really cool to see them again. But I'm nervous about Klaus. I really hope that everything goes to plan. He feels good. It's a great show, et cetera, et cetera. But really, really looking forward to it. However, there's all this downtime, and I thought, I wonder what the guys are doing. So I reached out to Joel a few days ago and just checked in to see whether they needed anything. You know me, like just trying to, I don't know, get amongst it. They're all good, but I reached out to him yesterday actually, and asked whether he'd be keen to do a podcast. So he's been staying at a hotel walking distance from my house. I live in the middle of Sydney anyway, so it's nice and easy. Everything's close to me. And so I wandered over there earlier this morning, and we caught up for a little while and just had a chat about, playing in Whitesnake, some of his backstory, doing all these different things, working with all these different people over the years, touring with Night Ranger, his early solo albums, some of, I guess, the mindset and the way that he approaches every opportunity or every circumstance that he's in. So we spoke a lot about the rescheduling of these dates and these some of the cancelled dates and what he and the whole band and the whole crew have been put into over the past few days. So a lot of stuff has been going on. It's a really cool chat. It was great to finally connect after a year later of trying to tee up this podcast. And it was just a really fun chat, a really quick one. As of the time of recording this, as mentioned, I will be seeing the guys tomorrow night. So no reviews of how it all goes because, that's in the future. But by the time you listen to this, I'm going to try and get this out this Thursday night. So it'll be the night after the Sydney show. But I really hope you guys enjoy this episode. It was a last minute thing. Didn't expect it to happen, so I thought I'd just wedge it right in here. Now, you can reach out to Joel by going to joelhoekstra.com. You can also go to whitesnake.com. You can check out the latest Whitesnake album, Flesh and Blood. You can also check out Joel's last main side project release. I believe I could get this wrong, but Joel Hoekstra's 13, a really great album with a lot of amazing guest appearances on it. We talk a little bit about that in this chat. And there's just a whole range of stuff that Joel's been doing over the years. He's also been playing with Cher, Trans-Siberian Orchestra, and mentioned before Night Ranger and a whole bunch of other stuff. Go and look at his bio on his website. There's a long, long list of all these amazing bands and artists that he's played for over the years and played with. So I'm going to stop crapping on. Let's dive into this episode. Yeah, sorry, the intro is a bit longer than expected, but I had to give some context. So please enjoy this really, really cool chat with the legend himself, Joel Hoekstra. You mentioned before you went to Frankie's last night. How was that?
Oh, it was great, man. What a great club. It's great to get out and for a minute and see a little bit of Sydney. And that house band is really awesome over there, rock and show. And it's so fun to see rock alive and well somewhere in the world. I mean, I don't think we have a rock club like that in the U.S. anymore, really. To go in on a Monday night and see a bunch of rockers there for a cool band, and it was really fun.
It's so cool because it's like one of those places where I think the locals have started to understand that you can go out any night during the week and see some live music, and Frankie's have sort of led the charge with that. But so many musicians that, like yourself, who are coming through town and looking for something to do, and sometimes usually the Monday is like the worst night of the week. It's just like you're sitting around going, oh, is there anything open to do? But Frankie's is there. And so I think people sort of go there now because people just drop in.
Yeah.
So it would have been cool just to, some of those guys there. I saw Joel, who's a guitarist. He put up or shared your photo that you put up last night. So I think it's really cool that all these great musicians over the world are sort of going, hey, this is a really cool.
Yeah, I mean, I have to say, I think that's the coolest rock club I've ever been in, man.
That's a big call as well. So that's awesome. Yeah, I think it's nice. Sydney's suffered quite a bit over the years with venues shutting down. I'm sure it's the same with a lot of big cities around the world. Like live music's just changed up and down, unless you're like doing big international touring and you're a large sort of act. But yeah, sort of everyday live music in a lot of global cities has suffered a bit. So Sydney seems to be bouncing back slowly.
Yeah, well, I live in New York City and it's been in total decline there. No question. It's been a little depressing watching CBGBs go away and really 48th Street, the whole row of music stores and go away. It's a little weird to watch it transform. And when they say rock is dying or rock is dead, then you kind of start to believe it when you see things like that. But then last night made me feel like, all right, we're doing all right. Come in here on a Monday.
There's people still around.
Yeah. Still some rockers out there.
Do you know, I mean, in New York it's so surprising because New York's just one of those, it's just got that reputation of one of these big global cities with so much art and culture, that's associated with it, that even a city like that's been impacted. Is there any particular reason why those changes have happened?
I think it's just costs there. Real estate costs is through the roof in New York City. I think it's just tough for private owned businesses, period, to survive. Mm. It's just becoming a city of pharmacies and banks and Starbucks.
Yeah.
Left and right. But I mean, I don't want to be overly negative. I mean, there's still plenty of great things about New York City or anywhere in the world. It's just an observation that it's watching some of the rock stuff go away has been a little sad, I guess.
Well, there's one really iconic venue in Melbourne, and I think late last week, that started to get torn down, and it was an iconic the Metro, I think it is down there, and that's been around for decades.
Oh, okay.
And it's a beautiful old theater, and they just took the bulldozers in and started tearing down everything inside. So that's obviously got a lot of people emotional about that because you lose a little bit of the identity of that city and that music scene. So there's lots of changes happening.
Yeah,
but I always say like the guys at Frankie's have got such a good setup that they have there, but also I think they've understood that as sort of the competition goes down, you stand out a lot more when you start to do something. Yeah. So I've always said to friends, I go, if you want to start a venue, do it now, because there's not a lot out there apart from like, especially sort of the smaller club sort of level. It's not too much. I mean, there's a big gap between club level and then arena. I'm sure that's the same in most places.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You had a few unexpected days in Sydney.
Yeah, a few unexpected days in Sydney. Certainly worse places to be stuck, but we're all frustrated. We'd rather be playing, of course. So.
Yeah.
But it is what it is. Klaus had a kidney stone, those that didn't know. And so through some shuffling, I mean, in the end, it's disappointing because people travel down here. That's the worst part, is you get people that arrange to fly and stay in hotels. And so it's not just a matter of going down the block to go to the concert as it would be in the States, I guess, at most places where people are from that area. So that's the hardest part. But we're certainly glad to be doing the show here in Sydney still and be able to do as much as we can down here. Mm. And obviously, it's just one of those things. I mean, what can you do? Klaus had a serious medical emergency, and it happens.
You can't avoid that.
The thing that people don't realize is that we're all extremely frustrated about it and sad about it, and it is what it is. None of us fly across the world and travel down here to sit in a hotel. I mean, this is only my second time down here. I came down here a little over a year ago with Cher got to do that tour down here. But I was really, really super excited to come down as Whitesnake and play Brisbane and Auckland as well. So it's obviously disappointing to only be able to hit Melbourne and Sydney down here. But like I said, we're doing the best we can to get done what we can. So
it certainly leads an extra layer of entertainment to the whole thing, you know, a bit of drama attached to it all, and everyone just trying to, I mean, from my end, especially with being like, and certainly not in the same realm whatsoever, but just being a musician and just doing sort of very sort of small scale touring and knowing how much of a logistical nightmare it is on a small level, let alone what it is, what you guys are doing as a package and with Live Nation involved. And I just looked and went, oh, good luck. Like, just to try and work it all out. And you watch the fans react, and I just think, I feel bad for the bands, like Scorpions and you guys, because you're the face of it all.
Yeah.
And rightfully so, people get emotional. And as you said, people are traveling, and there's a lot's invested into it, but there's a lot going on behind the scenes.
The others feel very bad for both tour managers over the last couple of days. I mean, those guys really have to deal with the logistics of it. And that is, you know, dealing with the promoter, dealing with the venues, and dealing with the managers of the hotels, trying to extend people's stays, trying to reroute flights. Because after this, we're, of course, headed to Indonesia and Singapore. Yeah. And then Whitesnake is continuing on to Japan on our own. So. Yep. There's exploring windows and trying to figure out how things could work with both camps, and obviously sold as a package. And so, yeah, it's a lot more complicated than people realize. And people think, well, why didn't you just go play a club that night? And it's like, well, it's not that simple. I mean, we have a stage set up that doesn't fit in, and we've signed a deal to come down as a package and play this. So people don't understand. Sometimes it's way more complicated than it would seem, I guess, on the surface.
Yeah, definitely. But, and I think people get attached to that sort of romantic vibe with the rock band. It's sort of, you know, hey, it's rock and roll, you know, we'll work out a way and we'll find a way to save the day. And it's just a massive operation. There's a lot of cogs.
Yeah. Well, there's definitely a lot more moving parts than just five guys in a band or six guys in the case of Whitesnake saying, definitely. Well, let's jam anyway.
Yeah.
It's so, I mean, it would be nice if it was that way. Trust me. Again, it's like one of those situations where our keyboard player, it's his first time down here.
Yeah.
So, I mean, think about how much we're just like, we're as bummed as anybody who made the arrangements, for sure. So it's frustrating for all of us, but it is what it is. And it's health, obviously, it's a serious health situation. There's no way around that.
Yeah, definitely. Oh, I think when it comes to stuff like that, it's just you get torn as a fan, and even sort of just seeing on the other side of the fence and just going, okay, well, you know, what's the reality of all this? And just you can't control it. So you just got to recover as best as you can.
I think the thing that people we feel everybody's frustration about it. And in the end, it will have been two shows. And now, granted, like I said, the thing that's hard down here is so many people travel and spend their money and take off of work and things like that to make these things happen. And so obviously that's frustrating for them and frustrating for us. But again, we did the same thing. We're away from our families, and we come down here, and none of us want to be sitting in a hotel.
Yeah,
definitely. We want to be out playing, man.
Yeah,
that's what we love to do. So,
what have you been doing? I saw a couple of videos you popped up online when trying to pass some time, being stuck in your hotel room, just jamming out. And have you sort of tried to make the most of the time, even just playing or just getting?
Yeah, always.
That energy out.
I always try to stay productive, mate. Yeah. I mean, that's just part of, but that's my philosophy, really, in terms of how to be successful or to make this whole music business thing work, is to give into it every day. It has to be a daily process. You can't just say, well, tomorrow or the next day. It's always got to be today. So, yeah, I did a couple sessions here in the room for people that have been on the back burner a little bit, and maybe a little bit more of that today even. And then Pavel and I from the Scorps got together and jammed yesterday for fun, played some blues, and
yeah, cool.
He's got some songs, and he just, for fun, he showed me his songs, and we just played them and had a great time. And so it's a good opportunity to, I guess, further some friendships out here too. You don't always have that opportunity when you're gigging and then next day's travel, everybody's tired from the travel, so it's a unique moment where here we are, just two bands hanging out. And so, hey, what are you doing today, man?
Yeah,
let's jam, let's have some fun. So, yeah, and those little things are fun for people, I guess, to see online, and hopefully lessens the pain a bit. There's not much I can do in my situation outside of just try to stay productive. Make lemons out of lemonade, or make lemonade out of lemons.
Right? Yeah, for sure. Yeah. You just got to try and maximize whatever that opportunity is. I mean, I saw that video and I thought that was quite cool because I think it put a different light on the situation and the way that you sort of framed it, saying, "This is what you do when you're stuck, you know." So let's just and I'm sure you worded that quite better than the way I just attempted to paraphrase it.
Right?
Yeah.
All right. Got to find a way to play guitar. What are we gonna do? Let's make this little video for Instagram.
Yeah, it was cool. Yeah. No, it was really good. You mentioned sort of just, I guess, that sort of approach of being productive, because, you know, I do my usual sort of write down a bunch of notes and things to talk about, and so I went on the website and went and kept scrolling through the list of people that you've worked with over the years. And just initially I just thought, wow, obviously your skills of a guitar player helps big time, but there has to be more than that to be able to be that versatile and be able to work with so many people.
I think so. I think it's a matter of working hard and just perseverance, I think, in the end, because it took a very long time for things to kind of open up for me. And a lot of those credits you're seeing are just times where I played with people one time or two, but I still feel like that's worth a mention I literally crossed paths with those people and played music with them or I'm on a recording with them or whatever. So I think it's fine to mention. I try and put the ones that I spent more time with at the top, but I take pride in all that stuff, just being around the music business long enough to have cool moments like that, play with some of my heroes, and it took a long time. Like I said, I think things didn't really open up for me until I was in my late 30s.
Yeah.
So many, many years of being that uncool guy, not making much money, struggling, playing kind of like some okay gigs. But I always worked hard, always, definitely. I've always been gigging super hard or teaching super hard. Mm. In the early days, it was a lot of guitar lessons, me teaching 70 students a week, and then I would supplement that with gigs until things took off enough with gigs that became the way I made my money. And now every once in a great while, I'll teach a lesson or something. But no matter what, I've had the guitar in my hands. I've been working hard.
Wow. Yeah, one thing I noticed when I was sort of looking through the years and the timeline of the things that you've done is that I think it was around, and trust me, I haven't stalked too much. I'm just reading what's on the internet.
That's all right.
But I noticed, I think you moved to New York in the early 2000s, the beginning of the 2000s.
Top of 2001.
Yeah, and before that from Chicago?
Suburbs of Chicago, and had a couple of years out in L.A., like 90 through 92, basically.
Yeah.
And that's it, yeah.
Was it sort of networking that sort of helped you make those changes to move or to find those first sort of, those first opportunities along the way?
To New York, you mean?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think, because I think you started putting out solo stuff around that time. Around the time that you moved to New York, I think, from what I could recall.
Yeah, the solo stuff was through one of my early teachers, TJ Helmrich, who works at Musicians Institute, and he worked for the Recording Institute department. And so I would visit him, and of course, I see her wearing a John Farnham shirt, my friend Brett Garcid. Right. So they were in L.A. Brett was in L.A. at the time, and him and TJ were recording those records that they made. And so they were doing a live show at MI, and they had Virgil Donati and Rick Fiorabracci as their rhythm section there, and I got to sit in on their rehearsals and jam with Rick and Virgil a bit. And then Brett couldn't make sound check, and I sound checked for him. And that led to a connection with those guys saying, hey, if you ever have anything you want us to play on, and TJ saying, I'll do this for you, or record them at MI, and you can do an... So hence my instrumental CDs that I made with those guys as my rhythm section. And I guess then right about at the same time, just connections in Chicago led to all the other stuff, really. Me going to New York. I was playing with a girl, Kathy Richardson, in New York, or in Chicago, and she got the role as Janis Joplin in this show called Love Janis. And so that's why I went to New York, and that ran for 2 years. And by the time it was closed, so a theater piece on Janis Joplin, basically. And it was really cool, really fun way to go to New York and be gigging nonstop, and really playing with Jim Peterick in the Chicago area, who I got to know through Kathy. Jim is from the band Survivor and Ides of March, those that don't know, and wrote a ton of huge hits, including Eye of the Tiger. And so he would have me in his house band for these world stage events, and have singers come out and do their hits, basically. And Kelly Kagi from Night Ranger was one of the guys that would be there every year. So we just see him once a year. But just being in the house band, I got to know Kelly. And when there was an availability in Night Ranger and they needed a guitar player, that got me in the door there. And so all these things kind of
built up over time.
I think anybody that hasn't taken the step from point A to point B usually is picturing a big break or something like that. Yep. But I always describe the way it really works as a series of small breaks that eventually become what looks like a big break.
Yeah, it's this gradual build up over time.
Yeah, yeah. You just keep stay busy, and then it's things just tend to happen, I think, through being productive every day.
Yeah. I'm always fascinated by those puzzle pieces, the building blocks sort of lead up to, as you said, like from the outside looking in, you go, oh, wow, like this person's just done so many great things and had this great career to date so far. And then you think that maybe there was that one moment where it sort of went from 0 to 100. But in most cases, 99% of the time, it's a grind, and it's a case of building networks of people, getting people confident in you, and building relationships with people, and eventually sort of gradually.
Yeah. I think it's very hard to... I mean, you're not going to go from your mom's basement to playing in U2.
Yeah.
It just doesn't work that way. You gotta step like up so everybody's comfortable with the level that you're at and understand that you're a reliable person and that you understand how it works. And so all you can do is just try and do the best you can with every situation. And it's not so boring and, I guess, practical, but that's really the way it works. Yeah. It's a fantasy, I think, with people, all this... Although I will say, I mean, all these small breaks I'm talking about, every one of them felt super exciting to me. So maybe you could look at it as a series of big breaks. I don't know.
Well, I guess it's all perspective, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. One thing that I've always noticed with, I'll just backtrack a little bit. Would you class yourself in any way as a session musician?
I don't know how to, I guess so, because I'll any situation I get to better myself as a player, and get paid and play in the real world, I'm into, because to me, that is a more realistic approach to being an actual musician rather than just like a shredder on YouTube. I don't want to spend 6 months creating a sensationalistic clip on YouTube to get views. That's not really my... I want to be in the real world and be out playing music. And so, yeah, I guess so, but I don't want that to come off as a derogatory thing. But I'm definitely open to playing any situation where I can get paid to get better, to practice in my instrument, then I'm open to that. And thankfully David Coverdale is fantastic with that, because as long as you're available for Whitesnake, David is into his musicians bettering themselves. He totally gets that. He's a musician really through and through, and is wonderfully supportive of me doing other things.
Yep. Yeah, definitely. And I think just in my circles with a lot of other musician friends, I think it's weird. I think in Australia, we sort of look at just being the identity of the guy in the band, and that's our whole world. And so everything is just invested emotionally, financially, everything. But we don't tend to find the side projects or find other opportunities to work with other people. And I kind of, I mean, maybe it's me having the light bulb moment sort of in the last few years, but I kind of look and go, wow, there's a lot of opportunities that are being missed. And so when I look at people like yourself that work with so many different people, not just like one style of music, I mean, very varied of styles and backgrounds and personalities as well. So, I mean, even personalities itself is one big thing. There's a lot of opportunity there for self-development in a way.
Yeah, definitely. And that comes off of timing because I went to GIT in Hollywood. That was one of my years in LA. I was going to the music school, those that don't know, Guitar Institute of Technology, or the big name for the school is Musicians Institute. So they have BIT and for bass, and GIT for guitar, PIT for percussion, yada, yada. So I did a year there, and pretty much when I got out of there, that was like 90, 91, right around the time everybody dreamt of leaving their hometown and going to LA and making it as a guitar hero, and Shrapnel Records was alive and well, and Guitar for the Practicing Musician and all that kind of stuff. It all died. Like Nirvana came out, Smells Like Teen Spirit, saw the video, boom, end of guitar solos became the least cool thing in the world. So for me, I needed to figure out a way to make myself valuable as a musician for a long time and make a living without relying on the uncool aspect of being like a virtuoso or soloist. Yeah. So it actually ended up being one of the best things that ever could have happened to me, because I played all these different types of gigs you're talking about and developed all these different skill sets out of desperation, because it was like the only way you're going to pay the bills and be able to do what you love. Which is ultimately to play music. Rock is always my first love, no question. That's what made me want to pick up the guitar. But I will say I do just enjoy playing. And even if it's some type of situation where I'm going to get my ass kicked, like if I sit down to play jazz with a real jazz player or something, I love it. It's fun. I like to be able to play. And it's just, it's a can of worms that you realize how much you suck. Yeah, and that's really music in general. Those that think they're amazing at music usually are not amazing at music, because it's really limitless. And the more you keep your mind open to, the more you realize, like, oh man, I've got so much to learn, and I'm really not much of a musician at all. And it's again, these things are perspective, and I don't want to beat myself up about it. But it's also important that you have proper perspective and humility on it, and acknowledge the fact that we all have a ton to learn as musicians. So that's my mindset, man. I'm not into the, I guess, just classifying myself as a rock star or a guy in this band. I like to just be a guitar player, a musician. And certainly the rock will always be my first love, and is the music dearest to my heart. Yeah. Classic rock in particular, because I kind of stopped listening to anything after 1990, basically. I like some of the grunge bands, but when people ask me what I'm into that's new, you mean like 1992, right?
Do you mean those remastered versions of...
I mean, there's so much music that I love from early on, and my dad was a music theory professor, and my mind ticked heavily in music theory with studying on the guitar. So a lot of times I just like to invent music off of, I guess, combining approaches, thinking about, like, you know, what if my mind thought about this? And I had a time period where I was practicing 5-6 hours a day outside of a theater gig that I was doing while I was on the road. And I would just take all these different things, and then I would start to combine them. So I would take a different time signature and play in it for an hour. And during the week, that time signature would have to change every day.
Yeah.
And then there would be a different scale system. So then I started to combine those two. So I say, okay, today I'm playing in 7-8 and A-flat melodic minor and all those things. You go through the whole circle of fifths, so I'd have seven scale systems. And so I definitely branched out a lot in terms of thinking about possibilities with music, and probably spent a lot of time doing things that a lot of the rock players that I know haven't done. But there's the compromise being a lot of those guys have really strong identities playing wise. And so I admire them for that as well. I don't know. We all have stuff to learn for sure.
I like that idea. It's almost like a musical obstacle course that you set yourself up for the week and just go, I'm gonna run up and down these things and jump through these hoops or whatever it might be, just to challenge yourself and get your mind ticking in a different way.
Yeah, definitely. I think a lot of it too is just keeping the physical skills going, and I'm probably not as ambitious with that these days as I was back then. Realistically, on a day off, I'll probably play for an hour or two. If I cut a track, it might be more. If I'm prepping for something like today, just because we've been off since South America, and we only really got to run the set before the Melbourne show one time. And then we played in Melbourne, and now it's been, I don't even know how many days here. I've kind of lost track, but so today I'm probably going to run the Whitesnake set a couple times, realistically. So I'll probably play for 3 hours today once I run the set a couple times, and, it depends.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's a bit different now as well, because obviously you want to keep challenging yourself, but it's probably different to what it was 10, 15, 20 years ago, because what's ahead of you is different compared to what it used to be. So I guess, the amount that you put in is going to be...
I guess there's part of it that nowadays it's nice to have a professional mission with it. That definitely helps. If somebody gives me a track to play on or something like that, I mean, I'll spend all day. It's not about not wanting to work hard, but it's about maybe having a mission. So if somebody gives me a track and they just want to guest solo for a minute, I'll sit around for hours and jam on it before I lay it down, just because that's part of getting better, and it's something that'll help
you. You're getting something out of it yourself.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. But it's nice to have that mission that somebody gives you.
Yeah, for sure. You mentioned David before. One thing I noticed with the last Whitesnake album, I think you wrote about 5 or 6 songs, or co-wrote with David, or contributed to some of those songs.
7, if you include the bonus tracks. If you get the deluxe edition, 7, and then I think there's an 8th coming out on a compilation disc perhaps next year. So,
oh, well, there you go.
So really 8. I think we had 8 co-writes. So let me push for as much as I can.
All right, yeah, for sure. Okay, so 8 it is.
Yeah.
Just talking about, you over the years getting better as a guitarist, what sort of, when it comes to songwriting, it's a different sort of thing, isn't it, in a way? I mean, you have to look at it very differently, removing yourself from the technical aspect to what works in a song. And then also, no doubt, was this the first time that you'd written with Dave as well?
Yeah. So, yeah. David.
David, sorry.
He would be way displeased with Dave.
Way too casual there. I'm glad he's not in the room.
Yeah. Oh.
Was it a bit daunting going into that with him?
Yes and no, because certainly I have a huge amount of respect for David, but at the same time, I'd already been playing in the band for a few years, so we have a great working relationship, and I just felt like we have a really clear avenue of communication that there was just no worries about. I don't think he felt like if there was something I was playing that he didn't like, that he had to sugarcoat it for me at all.
Yeah.
He'd just say, no, not that one. Or not that idea. I think most of my contributions on Flesh and Blood really were building out David's ideas more than they were me starting with something. So a couple things I think that were like Good to See You Again was a lot of my riffs, and that's something that definitely built out from beginning with my ideas, but a lot of the ideas were like Well I Never or something, that where David has a chorus and then we build out a verse and build out a bridge and a solo section and things of that nature. So I tend to make it really practical and really, I guess, boring in a way, because I just look at it like I'm here to support David and try to be the best bandmate to him that I can be, more than getting, I guess, in my own head thinking about what it's going to do for me. It's more what I can do for David to make this thing work and have everybody around me happy, have Reb be happy that I'm in a guitar team with him, and have Tommy and Michael say cool stuff. And I just try and be a good bandmate and fit into that role more than... I guess, trying to think about what this is going to do for me in a sense. So while it was like, I have the respect for David to answer your question, no, because at the same time, every step of the way, I'm just doing the best I can. And that's all anybody can do. It's not so cliche, but it's true.
Well, I guess it sounds like there's a bit of a natural sort of progression from, as you said, you're familiar with him, play with him for quite a few years, and it sort of just naturally sort of went to
that exactly
direction.
And we'd already tracked the Purple album together, so we'd been in the studio. If it was some kind of situation where I joined the band and went straight into that, I probably would have been a lot more nervous. I think having been out and done a couple tours and made an album already, it made it a little less frightening.
Yeah, definitely. You've been in this world for quite a few years, so I think, as you said, there's been sort of this natural sort of journey along the way where you've built your network, you built your own reputation, and people have got trust in you and your ability. But you know, these are a lot of iconic people that you've worked with over the years. So I think from the outside, you sort of look and go, oh wow, that would have been a really daunting prospect or project to dive into. But I think you mentioned before, it's all about mission, isn't it? So if you've got the mission in front of you, it makes it a lot clearer to sort of move forward.
Yeah, I mean, in the end, okay, let's get really corny, but life is bigger than all of it too, right?
Yeah.
So if you put yourself in the position of we're all human beings and I'm just going to be the best person I can be with all this stuff and break it down to try and make it logical, because there's lots of magic and associated with the music business.
Yeah,
it's because it's a roller coaster ride, right? Mm-hmm. Lots of passion. So the more you can kind of try to level it out and not buy into like the hype and all that, and just, all right, let's just do the best we can. I think the better off you are in the business, and just remind yourself all you can really do is come in and do the best you can with any asset.
Gives you more longevity, doesn't it? When it comes to your own,
gosh,
your own
I
place.
Don't know. That's yet to be seen, right?
Hey, you've been doing it for a while now.
I hope I can keep doing it. Yeah.
Oh, man. Sort of circling back to one of the things I said earlier with working with so many different people, and maybe I'm overthinking it a little bit, but I'm always conscious about more than just the playing itself and sort of the personal skills. And because you've worked with so many different people over the years, just having different personalities, and no doubt you would have had people that were really, really easy to work with, just a natural sort of relationship formed and just it just flows, and then other ones where it might be getting blood out of a stone, so to speak, the polar opposite. I mean, for you, what sort of helped you sort of get through those ups and downs with working with lots of different people over years? This is not an opportunity for me to try and get some names out of you or anything like that. I'm just more concerned about, I guess, the approach that you take mentally to navigate through it all.
Well, I like to say that when in this world, you get back what you put out in terms of energy, right? So if you're putting out positive energy to people, you tend to receive positive energy back, right? Yeah. And there are times where people are cycling in negative energy and they're dealing out negative energy to you. And the times you really make a difference in the world is where you take that negative energy and you don't give in to the first impulse to give back negative energy, and you give back something positive. And that's really when you can make a difference. I'm not saying I bat 1,000 with that. Not even close. That's a baseball analogy.
Yeah, I gotcha.
But that is what I tend to think of. So when it comes down to relating with people that you're working with, just do your best to keep giving people positives, even if you're dealing with a negative, because often you can break the cycle. Because somebody might be spinning from receiving negative energy, and then they deal it towards you. And I mean, we live in that world right now with social media, right? So somebody's unhappy with their life. They see you online, an image of you they don't like, or a video of you they don't like, and boom, they spot off a negative energy at you. And your first impulse is to write back, and obviously, oh, you troll or whatever. Oh, yeah. And so it's important to try and do your best with not giving into that stuff. And like I said, I give in here and there and get frustrated, but in the end, I know that's just a waste of energy. You're better off just kind of constantly dealing out positives. We're all human beings, and life is way too effing short to spend it cycling on hating people for no reason whatsoever. People you don't even know. It's stupid.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Have you Have you always had that? Just always had that sort of approach, or have you sort of learned it from people?
Definitely a learning process. Yeah. Definitely a learning process, and how to process a lot of the shit. And as somebody who comes into, I guess, longstanding bands where there's original members, and you're always going to kind of be that quote unquote replacement guy, or you're going to deal with a lot of that.
Yeah.
So that's just how it is. And there's nothing you can do about that outside of just remain respectful to people and just keep working hard, and hopefully that stuff turns around. And it does. It's funny. I've seen a lot of people over the years that had initial negative reactions to me being in bands. And over the years, as I've maybe developed a little more staying power, so to speak, and been around, that a lot of these people have softened their opinion and end up liking me in the end. It's funny.
Was there anybody, or have there been people in particular that have kind of, maybe not directly, but sort of indirectly taught you some of these things along the way, as far as that humility and sort of being mindful in the moment and not sort of impulsively reacting to situations? Or were there other people that you sort of looked to and thought, that's the way I should emulate in a way?
Yeah, I've had a lot of really good influences. I mean, joining the Night Ranger guys was a big step for me in terms of understanding how to learn, how to deal with doing interviews and doing press, and I guess understanding some of the etiquette of the business. And that was a great learning experience with those guys. Definitely learned a ton from them. And David is fantastic with always remaining positive and always managing to see the glasses half full.
Yep.
So yeah, I definitely learned from these guys. Why wouldn't you, right? There's a reason that those guys, Night Ranger or David or any of these guys, Tommy Aldridge, there's a reason these guys have been in the business a very long time. And you have to be foolish not to want to learn from them, right?
A wealth of knowledge, wealth of experience,
right,
life experience.
Right, wealth of experience. And it would be foolish of me not to learn.
Yeah, definitely. Slight sidestep. Your 13 project you put out a few years ago, are you going to do another one of them?
Yeah, there's a follow-up in the works. I've just kind of been waiting for a very long time on Russell Allen to do the vocals on it. And love Russ. Russ, hope you're tracking right now. But yeah, as soon as that gets going, I'd love to get it out this year if I can. I'm angling to do my guitars on our break here when we finish this current run. We go to Japan after we do Indonesia and Singapore with the Scorps. And after that, when I get home, I would love to do my guitars. So
there you go. Oh, yeah. Looking forward to it. Because I think, was it Frontiers that put out the last release?
Mm-hmm.
So high possibility that they might jump on board again?
Hopefully. Yeah. I mean, that's the plan.
That's the plan?
Yeah.
Excellent. I'm keeping on the time, really conscious of you got some Whitesnake songs to run over. And
we also got
things.
Some beautiful sunshine today, man. I got to get my pasty white skin like a little tan here. We got the opportunity to lay out by the pool. I mean, I might not. It's winter back in New York City, man. I left snow coming here.
Well,
or
I was
deep freeze.
Well, my wife and I were in New York last year, and I reached out to you. We were trying to hook up a podcast, and I think you were just coming back from Monsters of Rock cruise, I think, and so didn't quite work out time wise. But you know, we were there in late Feb, I think, and oh. Man, it was cold.
Yeah.
And I know it wasn't even the coldest
it's
at that point.
Trust me, man. I'm looking at this sun today going, this is nice. I don't think it's going to be, I think Japan at this time of year or in March when we're there is going to be lows of 40 Fahrenheit and highs of 60, I believe. So not quite enough, like warm enough to be out at the pool. So, hey, an opportunity to get out and get a little sun. I love it.
Well, as you said before, it's maximizing, you know, the opportunities that you've got or whatever the situation is. But it's a beautiful view you got here, so make the most of it.
Yeah, absolutely, mate. Excellent. Thanks so much. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. If you want to reach out to Joel, you can go to joelhoekstra.com. He's on most of the socials. You can search for his name. Should pop up straight away. Otherwise, his handle on most of those platforms is joelhoekstra13. go to whitesnake.com, check out the latest album, Flesh and Blood. Great album, really, really good. So highly recommend checking that out, especially if you're, well, if you're a Whitesnake fan, you should already know about it. But if you love a lot of, you know, 70s blues rock, but it's got a great modern production. Anyway, I'm going to stop trying to convince you. Go and listen to it. Whitesnake.com is the best place to check all that out. If you're an international listener, click on the tour dates. I believe they're going to do a North American tour with Sammy Hagar sometime this year. So go and check that out if you are from the States. If you're from somewhere else in the world, I've got no idea, but go and click on the tour dates and no doubt you'll be well informed. I will have another Crazy Talk episode that comes out next Tuesday. That'll be episode 205. As mentioned in the beginning of the episode, I'm recording this the day before the Whitesnake and Scorpions gig in Sydney. So I can't really tell you how the gig went. So I will use the next episode to do a bit of a recap of how the show was, what I got out of it. I don't know, you know, just whatever people do when they review something. And I'll also just talk about the last few days. I mean, it's been really cool. And there's a lot of stuff coming up this week as well. So no doubt I'll have plenty of things to waffle on about. Go to andydowling.net if you want to learn more about me, the other podcasts that I have, our band Lord, that's lord.net.au if you just want to go straight there. I've got all my social media handles there as well. There's plenty of ways to learn more about me and you can reach out to me very, very easily. One final thing before I wrap it up. If you're listening to this on time and you live in Sydney and you've got a free Sunday afternoon, this Sunday, the 1st of March, I'm doing a little bit of a podcast meetup. It sounds so nerdy. At the Pump House in Darling Harbour. And that sounds really sus as well. It's a pub. It's got heaps of great craft beers and just a really cool spot to meet up with some people and shoot the shit and have a couple of drinks. So if you're free, come on down. I'm going to kick it off from about 2 p.m. I'm not booking anything out. It's nothing special. It's just me finding somewhere to sit down and have a beer and hopefully a few people come along and hang out with me for an hour or so. And if you don't drink, don't stress. Come along, grab a soda water or a soft drink or whatever tickles your pickle, and just the conversation's more important. So come on out if you've got some time and you live in the area. It'd be great to see you. That is enough from me. Until next week, folks, more episodes coming. This train is a rolling. Ta-ta. Larry, please.